Without further ado, last week on Monday, we had a conversation with our forest planner. As you all know, forest planning is something that's been on and off again and on again and off again. It's off again this year due to funding restrictions and that sort of thing. But we have a forest planner in place, and they're moving forward with the process of forest planning, which is, there's several different processes. And so Monday morning, we talked about the need to get in touch with the county commissioners and our elected officials, and I think there was phone calls made to the state, county commissioners and several other national elected officials, that sort of thing, just to let them know that we were starting the process, which is required by law, for Forest Plan to do an inventory of all of our streams to determine if they were eligible for wild and scenic designation. And so the reason for us contacting all you last week on that was to basically inform you that there was going to be a notice that comes out, or a news release coming out, that we would be doing that, and we didn't want to hit you guys without knowing that was coming. The process is required by law for forest planning efforts. It's in the 219 regulations, and I brought a copy just because it was so many pages, but I brought you a copy of the 219 regulations. I brought you a copy of the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act, and then also our Forest Service Handbook regulations on that as well, so you can look it over at your leisure. But other than anything that I had in the email kind of notice that I sent to you and talked to you about last week, is there any further questions that we can try to answer for you today?
Just to get a better understanding, and is it correct to say the Forest Service is going to be reviewing these waters that are both on forest, off forest, private, whatever, just for a general designation?
Yeah, I took a look at that a little bit more closely, and that's why I brought Cindy here. But basically what we have is the waters that are within the boundary of the national forest that go up to their headwaters. So there are situations, I would assume, where there's a private inholding that's within the forest boundary, but it is just, from our forest boundary up to the headwaters of each of the streams or tributaries.
So maybe you can give me a short course, I don't understand, but what impact does that have on those waters if they receive that designation of wild and scenic with regards to public use or recreational use or fishing or whatever?
Okay.
So this step would not be determined that they are wild and scenic. That has to be designated by Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Those have more stringent requirements. But if they're determined to be eligible, which is similar to what we did before in the forest planning process, if they're determined to be eligible, then we manage them similar to as if they were designated, but it's a much more loose concept. So in the 1990 forest plan, we did identify some rivers and streams that were eligible, and a classic example would be Green River. It was determined to be eligible for wild designation inside the wilderness, and then scenic from its stretch from the wilderness boundary all the way to the forest boundary at the end of the Cora Highway. And that does include some private properties within. So it's just determined to be eligible, not designated. That's a whole different ballgame.
But did you say that if it's determined to be eligible, it's still held to those same standards until a final decision is made?
So it's held to similar standards. So we try to keep those eligible. But there's not very many restrictions that would apply because they aren't truly designated.
I guess I got.
So there's a little bit of a mix.
Trying to draw a parallel, excuse me.
Yeah.
in terms of understanding, because unfortunately this process can be interfered with along the way, whether it's by litigation or
right.
advisory groups or study after study after study that goes on for 10 years and they haven't reached a conclusion yet, but they still fall under the some of those limited restrictions.
Right, so maybe use the Green as an example again. So the Green River is not, it's eligible, but it is not designated. If there was a decision to put, request to put a dam on the Green at this point on the forest, that could be considered and could go through the environmental impact or environmental analysis process. If it was designated through Congress, that would not be, we could not consider it. So that's kind of the difference. We would still manage the Green to, for purposes of retaining quality fisheries, quality recreation, water quality itself. So those things we would still manage even if it's eligible. But would we step it up quite a bit if it's actually designated as well? So does that help?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, so I've sat with Rob briefly on this, but the Grays and the Hoback, or the Grosvenor and the Hoback, are they designated or are they just eligible?
They are designated portions of the Grays. It's primarily the Hoback and the Granite Creek. There's quite a few of them that were designated in that 2004 designation process.
And so
those are designated.
How have you seen those designations impact the adjacent landowners or private property holdings?
That's a great question. So the private property owners, they already have to, if they want to put up flood control or change out a head gate, something like that, they have to go through the regular process. They have to contact the Army Corps of Engineers, determine if they need a special permit or if they fit in a nationwide permit. They have to contact the county planning and zoning because they're going to be concerned about water quality and those kinds of things. And they also have to contact the Forest Service. So there is that third entity, the Forest Service, is involved once we have a designated river, because the Forest Service takes the lead in making sure that we're retaining those qualities for which they were designated.
So the Forest Service will have some impact on private land holdings adjacent to or further downstream?
It could, and it depends on if those public properties are, for example, there could be a segment of the Green, for example, that was designated at some point above private property, and so the private property below that wouldn't really be affecting the values upstream, so to speak. If it could affect the values of a segment below stream, then yes, there could be some more stringent discussions about, okay, here's how you can still meet the requirements and still retain that water quality. So it doesn't add a whole lot. It does include more discussions certainly with the Forest Service.
Is there any potential if those waters received the designation as wild and scenic that in the future that might have some impact on the waters below there that are on the Forest Service? Is there any history of that?
So,
in other words, if you get wild and scenic on the forest, is there any future potential for down the road that having some kind of impact to further proceed with that development across private land, downstream land, whatever? Is there any history of that?
Yeah, I mean, there is, maybe if I understand your question correctly, let me use the Snake River as an example. There are some private entities between the Hoback Junction and Alpine, high-end resorts, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And they do have commonly want to do different things, like they might want to have flood control because they don't want to have a piece of their property impinged by water.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can be a little more restrictive for those requirements because it has potential to affect the remainder of that river.
Well, I guess what I was getting at, if you're talking about extended it down to Cora on the Green River. If in fact you did that, would there be some impact of going from Cora down to Cottonwood or whatever?
No, no, really we can only designate the forest
on the
portion
forest. Okay.
And everything downstream
that's
is.
That's what I would get against too, because I think in our discussion, I understood the other day that that could fall right on down the river.
Yeah, no, and that's where I was. I did mislead you a little bit on that because my lack of understanding. Yeah, it's really only those private land
within the
yeah. So, like for example, Hoback River, the Upper Hoback, it's considered eligible above the private land Ricketts up there, and then it's eligible below, but it's not designated as eligible on that private
land. Let's say, for example, I'm just going to hypothetically, let's say Ricketts want to go in and they're having some bank erosion and they want to go in and do some stream rehabilitation and fisheries work. How is that going to impact them?
Right now,
all they have the answer to is the core.
Right, and the.
Well, they do. If it's on private property, you're right. They do just talk to the core. Mm-hmm. But we commonly will ask them to let us know as well if it's going to affect the stream down below, from common courtesy. But you're right. If it was designated, then that steps up the requirement. They do have to contact the Forest
Service. And how would the Forest Service?
If it's designated.
It's too soon to tell, but how would they respond to a request such as that? Is it just going to be permit work and following through, or are they going to say no because it's natural and wild the way it is?
If it's eligible, there's hardly any kind of things we would require because we can't. It's not designated. If it's designated, then we could start, then they have to request. Okay, here's what we're planning to do. They normally send that request to the Corps of Engineers and to the county, and then the three of us communicate, the three different agencies, and we can have input, for example, on the design of the bank erosion so that it doesn't affect visual quality or recreation experience or doesn't block the fisheries components, something like that. So it's fairly easy to work through. It's when people start to do things without any kind of permission from the Army Corps or the county. That causes problems. There are a couple of those kinds of problems in Teton County, for example. So it's the three entities working together more than anything. And there's pretty much everything can be mitigated. If there's a concern, instead of using this or putting this in this part of the stream channel, move it back or something like that.
One other, and you mentioned there was three designations: recreation, wild, and scenic, and historic.
Recreation. Wild, and scenic.
And scenic.
Oh.
Yeah.
So they'll come up with those determinations. That's what your team is coming in to do.
Yeah. The first step is they'll just determine whether or not they're eligible, and then the second step they would say, okay, they're eligible for scenic or for wild.
And that's what the public will be helping us determine. You guys will help us determine which rivers should be considered eligible, which rivers and streams, and also what value should be.
And also, I think the release that's coming out, and with the release is going to be a story map, so you guys will be able to pull that up and actually click on every stream and see. And you know, we're looking for comments right off the bat with, you know, are we missing something? Is there development that we don't know about? Is there, you know, a stream maybe that we're missing?
So you're just trying to inventory the stream.
Yeah. So and so we're looking for, you know, assistance with that as well. So
between the three different designations, what are the different
criteria?
Yeah. Do you know those yet, or?
That's in there. And I tried to read through a few of those things, but like I said, I figured you guys could read it and understand. And again, once the news release comes out and you have an opportunity to look at the story map and all that stuff and then read that.
One may be acceptable and the other may not.
Yeah.
So
you know,
that could be a way of determining which one goes into which category.
Mm-hmm.
Wild is almost always occurring inside wilderness, so it almost gives it a double type of protection.
Okay.
So wild is almost always inside.
Which can't do anything longer than center. So.
It's almost like a double protection for.
Yeah, and it's like, I was just thinking on the way over here, something like Silver Lake Dam. You know, there's a structure mm-hmm. on Silver Creek, and then there's, you know, water diversions and that sort of thing. So those are the types of things that we'll take into account right off the bat to say,
determination.
Yeah.
Okay.
So for eligibility, you know, I haven't seen many head gates added. I've been on the forest for 27 years. So most of the head gates we go in are already in. Mm-hmm. And if people want to replace their head gates, that's something. Even if it's determined eligible, we'll just make sure that, hey, it's not going to disrupt the scenery or the. But we do that anyway, mm-hmm. quite frankly, if they want to replace a head gate. About the only thing that we would have to be, you know, considered of is anything that disrupts the free flowing nature of the water, mm-hmm. which we're going to have to do anyway, even if it's not eligible or if it's not designated. So at this point, I guess the big thing is to know that it's just an exercise to determine what's out there that needs to be considered, and then what is the highest value that it should have mm-hmm. As far as our management practices. But anything that's going to be overly restrictive, or, you know, starting out with, you know, if there's anything that's proposed, it still goes through the environmental analysis mm-hmm. process, and that gives the public the ability to react to that that proposal. So you still have that comment. And then also, if it's ever going to be designated, that is a big step. And it mm-hmm. takes a lot of public involvement, and we went through that for the 2004 Snake River project, where the county determined they're not interested in having the Green River added to that system at that time. So there's always that. There's many steps in the process for public involvement. This is just mostly an inventory stage at this point.
And they're going to start that soon.
Commissioner Bowden.
So in the determining the eligibility and looking at this, and that I've been quite a few years since I really studied this, but it supposedly has to meet this section of criteria.
Correct.
And
correct.
Our county natural resource plan basically says the county, Sublette County, will not support it if it does not meet the criteria, okay, which is what Congress says. Mm-hmm. But the problem is a lot of this criteria is subjective. So my concern is when you start having that discussion about criteria, we want to be at the table as a cooperating agency and participate in that, because otherwise somebody in the back room makes a decision that, oh yeah, I think it meets the criteria, it looks scenic to me, and all at once then we've got to try and stop it rather than having our input during the process. And if there's one thing I'm adamant about is that we have a seat at the table when that discussion is occurring. Mm-hmm. And I think you're underplaying the impact of water diversions. Nobody's going to be applying for a new water right with a diversion on the forest, I don't believe. Mm-hmm. But existing head gates,
well, we have,
you know, when my head gate washes out and it happens to be on the forest, or I have my ranch has a permit, Pocket Creek Lake, to store mm-hmm. water, and if that was wild and scenic and I need to go in and work on the dam, number one, I've got to get there. Mm-hmm. What do I have to do to go through the Forest Service to get access to even get to the dam to work on it? I mean, it just goes on and on.
Yeah,
so it's critical.
That, but you're right. So we have head gates on the designated rivers and streams as well. And they do have to go through a process, I mean, to replace their head gates. But certainly we're not trying to take away anybody's water rights, far from it. But there are the steps that they have to go through. So, yeah, I totally understand your concerns, and that's why, through this process, we wanted to contact you early on.
Well,
and then
I appreciate
you'll be
that.
Totally involved.
I appreciate
because,
that.
Yeah, we want to make sure people they can make informed decisions on what they would like to see. So, exactly, Joel. I totally get that.
Mr. Chairman, so I think the one, the one caveat that is really important with this thing is the folks that are going to be involved in the study process, how are they going to be, who's going to determine who they are? Because we all know, or most of us know, the environmental community is pretty darn strong. Mm-hmm. And so, here again, I'm looking from a kind of a slanted point of view, but the environmental community, has a tendency to do some things and ask for some things that impact a lot of folks that don't think along their line. So, who's gonna point and say you, and you as far as the group that's gonna study, make the study? Of the different streams and recommend them or not recommend them.
So we have a team in our regional office that has done that and is doing that on various forests as we get close to the forest plan. So it's not something that we're picking and choosing locally or even regionally. It's just this team that is doing it on whatever forest is getting close to the.
I understand that, Rob, but I'm telling you, local's better than far away. In other words, when mm-hmm. I say that, people who are here, take Joel Bousman, for instance, mm-hmm. or me, or any of us here, are more familiar with a lot of the surroundings, a lot of what we believe would be beneficial, more so than having a stream. Whatever designation it is, maybe we believe it should be the other way. So when this team comes into an area, it would appear to me somebody that is familiar with a lot of this country should at least be there, you know, as a right. As a player, not necessarily as one of the decision makers, but they certainly should be a player as far as historical information mm-hmm. about some of this stuff.
Yeah, and that's what we're going to be asked. What we are asking for is input into those, you know, proposals, you know, the data that comes out. I mean, there'll be several steps where, you know, we'll come out with data that's based on what the team has seen and identified on the ground, and then we'll be asking for, you know, comment on that. And then, you know, and then they'll refine their data. So it'll be an iterative process where we come back to folks and ask for their input on the various steps that we have to take. So I think that's going to cover your concern.
Mr. Lauser.
In the dictionary of the Forest Service, and you have wild and scenic rivers, where does the WSA come in?
Wilderness study areas.
It's a I mean, are they the kind of the same thing?
They're kind of the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very similar. Has to go through public involvement. Has to be some kind of recommendation process for it to even move up to Congress. So we went through that process, like I said, in the Snake River, the Snake River, Craig Thomas bill. That could have included other portions of rivers that were already identified as eligible in this county, such as the Green and the Hoback. But there were concerns, and so the commissioners at that time said, no, we're not interested in having that move forward, and so it didn't move forward to the designation process. So
I guess my concern is that if you start talking about wild and scenic rivers, and once it gets to the what stage? I had it written down here.
Designated.
Well, not designated.
Eligible.
Yeah, you're eligible. Mm-hmm. They're eligible.
Yeah.
You get to that stage. In a WSA, it's almost like a wilderness study area. there is so much pushback that it just stays in a wilderness study area, and it just as well be wilderness. So I would be very concerned is when we start designating something or we start putting it into that category, we're stuck, and we can't get out of it, rather than, you know.
So, and that's fair, and that's what you'd want to comment on. For example, the Green River, that has been determined to be eligible since 1990.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you've seen any changes in management, range, head gates, any of those things, other than for us to get a little bit smarter about, are there mitigations that can be put in place so we still protect those values? But you don't see any further restrictions in those areas, unless we start to see problems with water quality. I think we do have some concerns for water quality in the Green, and it's commonly associated with recreation and people camping too close to the river. So that's an example of a river system that is eligible, has already been determined to be eligible, but you shouldn't be seeing any major restrictions mm-hmm. because of that at this point. It's a little bit different than a WSA. A WSA has a lot more, stringent requirements.
Thank you.
Cindy, you just pointed out one of the biggest fallacies
in
wild and scenic designation. Because, number one, you're already on the forest. So it's not, you've got control already over mining and, you know, all that kind of stuff. The biggest impact for water quality in the future is overuse by recreation.
Absolutely.
So why in the world do you want to designate it as wild and scenic? You advertise it. People all over the world want to flock to the Green River because it's wild and scenic. You're putting your poster child up for destruction by over-advertising. It's just so plain. By destroying it with too many people.
You bet, and that's something you comment on. And conversely, there will be environmental people who have environmental concerns and say, if you don't designate it, is it not going to be protected? There's two sides of the coin, and that's why we have to have.
Well, unless you're prepared to limit the people, and I've never seen a Forest Service yet that's really prepared to say we're only going to allow 3,000 people access in the Green River in any one season. That's politically not very feasible, and that's one reason it's never been done. So I guess in my mind, one of the downsides of a designation is overuse because of advertising.
Well, I'm gonna bring a little more forward from what you're just saying. So one of the criteria for coming into Sublette County and using the Forest Service and overusing is they should be required to go to Green River Lakes. And so by the time they go to Green River Lakes and come back, they probably are going to just keep going because that damn road up there can take care of a lot of concerns. But
the best way to limit use.
The only way you can go to Yellowstone is up over Union Pass.
Having said that, I'm in charge, so to speak, of four different head gates that come out of the river.
Mm-hmm.
And the more people that come into that system, the more impact they will have on me, because all of a sudden somebody sees a head gate, maybe there's a log washed up in it, who knows what's happening. Happens all the time. So the next thing I know is part of one of the structures washes away because of high water. Now I want to go in and repair that in the fall. Now I've got a lot of people that have seen what's been going on the river, and whether it's part of the system or not, I'm going to run into issues when I call the Corps to say, is it a 404 permit, I think?
Usually it's a
404. Yeah. And all of a sudden they're going to say, well, you know, we've been studying that river. And probably now you're going to have to do this in order to repair that structure. And it won't be timely because I'm going to have to now go through permitting. By the time I get the permits to do the work, winter's rolled in, I can't do the work. spring rolls around, I sure can't do the work. So those are concerns, not only for me, but for whoever uses those kind of streams. And Joel's right. The more impact, the more people we bring in, the bigger impact occurs. It's just the way it is. And, you know, it's a double-edged sword.
And I completely appreciate that. And I just, you know, just so you guys all know, this is required by Congress. This is federal law. You know, we're just moving forward with what is, you know, required to us to do. And we're trying to make it as inclusive as possible, which is required by law as well. So, I mean, that's where we're at. It's part of the process.
We understand that. Yeah. I appreciate the heads up.
And I think that's about all we can do is, you know, on the local level here, just ensure that we're, you know, communicating and having those cooperative discussions on how we move through this process.
From my standpoint, thank you for both coming and sending too, because she clarified some things that I had questions on the other day, and that did ease my mind some on the private property.
And if you ever want misinformation again, just come and talk to me, and I can tell you what I know, which is very little.
What's the beauty of this process is that we're going through the public involvement phase, not just because we have to, but because it's critical. Mm-hmm. You have to know which ones do you guys think are rivers or streams that really need to have some attention because of a historic significance, or which ones are which concerns do you have? Head gates, those kinds of things. You don't have to take my word for it. That's the kind of things you comment on, and then we get you something back so you either gain confidence or lose confidence either way, you know. But certainly, once a river is designated, then you do have that third level of paperwork, which is a very valid concern.
Then you are.
We will get that. The permitting process is a little bit more for designated, not necessarily for eligible.
But I think we've already heard several comments, and I'm looking forward to you guys, you know, making some of these comments, because that's the kind of thing we can, you know, when it comes to the issues as we're discussing this in our NEPA process for the forest plan, we can bring those up to the front and address them right off the bat. So,
well, I think we're fortunate too, because we have a pretty well rounded out group. We each know part of the county pretty well.
Well, and that's the value of having you guys come today to begin this dialogue, interchange, make us aware of what's going on. So hopefully we'll have more opportunities for that.
This process has taken place in several other forests in the region already. So if you'd like, we can research that out and let you know, see what they came up with. But I know they're fine-tuning this as they go along. And I think we're one of two forests this year that is going through this study. So they're trying to make it consistent across all the forests in the region. I really appreciate that, so that it does not weigh more heavily one way or the other. So the proof will be in the pudding, as Joel will be.
So we have time, because it's off the table this year.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I have one other unrelated question that I forgot to ask at that meeting when the regional forester was there. Where are we at on the Silver Lake project?
So the MRA is in its final, the minimum tool analysis is in its final stages. I think Rio Verde is taking a look at it right now. Is that?
Yeah, we've been working closely with Mike, adding some alternatives that we have to review so that we can rule them out. I think we're really, really close. Just fine-tuning it now. Mike has provided some input back to us. We're working with a couple of questions we had with our dam engineer out of the regional office. But it's really close to being submitted. And what we wanted to do is have something that's solid, so when we do submit it, it isn't going to come back to us with what about X, Y, and Z. So I think it's moving along really well. And it is helping us, it's informing the NEPA process as well, because those alternatives will be considered in the NEPA process. So
do you do this before you start NEPA, or is this part of NEPA?
Right now we're doing it almost in tandem, where the consultants are looking at everything we do. They'll be looking at this before we send it off to the regional office as well, so that they can provide their input. But the consultants will, we had already talked about that. They're going to be piecing things together now, and then they'll fine tune that EA. So yeah. Maybe, Rob, you have a better understanding.
So you're using an EA?
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. So in order to make a decision, we have to be able to actually implement that decision. So the minimum tools analysis has to be complete with signatures on it
right. Before
we can make that decision. And NORA makes the decision on that minimum tool analysis, which is the regional forestry.
Excuse me, could you say that in real time? Minimum tool analysis.
So anytime we do what is considered a non-conforming activity in a wilderness, which is, you know, in this case, it's using equipment to test the dam and see what's needed. Anytime we do a non-conforming activity, we have to do what's called a minimum tool analysis. And that analysis basically takes a look at what is being requested to happen and what are the pros and cons, if you will, of all the different alternatives.
Trying
to get to what it is that we absolutely need to do within a wilderness to accomplish the needs. For example, when we do trail work, if we need to blast rock or get rid of rock on a trail that maybe horses travel on, we have to do that minimum tools analysis and talk about whether we use explosives or whether we use hand drills or picks or, you know, all that stuff. So another law that we're trying to conform to.
Normally would that require
everybody
a month, 6 months, a year, a week?
Depends on the project. This was a pretty significant project only because the initial proposal was to drive the two pieces of equipment into the wilderness, 4.5 miles into the wilderness. So what are we looking at different alternatives to accomplish the same task? And then the forest supervisor will be able to say, this is the one I think is the minimum tool, and this is what we're recommending. And we're looking for approval from NORA and possibly the chief on this one. So this was a little bit more extensive because it involves motorized equipment, and oftentimes that has to be brought to the chief of the Forest Service. Blasting for hand drills or rock drills, motorized rock drills would not be bumped up to the chief. Those are within the regional forester's capabilities.
So is it fair to say that from a local standpoint, your recommendations carry a lot of weight, one way or the other?
Yes, absolutely. The district ranger's recommendation to the forest supervisor, and then the forest supervisor to the regional forester. And if the regional forester has to go to the chief, same thing. They want us to have this squared away at this level so that it's got solid backing. It's got solid reasoning.
Carries a lot of weight, Mr. Vickery, but it doesn't equate to a sledgehammer. in these kind of things, I can always be overturned, but yeah.
It depends hugely on who's at the top and the other end, whether this is going to happen or not. And so,
yeah. So Silver Lake is an interesting
time when they're going to be able to get in there and fix that dam.
This is a real unique project in that we're wanting to get permission for the testing first. It's not for the testing. They wanted to do testing by hand, no problem. But anytime we have motorized equipment, that's when we have to go through some minimum requirements analysis. This one is unique in that we're wanting to get permission for the testing with the understanding we have to get the correct information for an informed decision on what needs to be done for the dam in the future.
I thought they'd already done the testing. My understanding.
No, they. What they need to do is they need to test the substrate in the dam and some areas around the dam at, you know, deeper, so they can drill holes basically, so they know what is going to be needed in the future if and when they go in and fix the dam, because there was like a $500,000 discrepancy in what it would cost to redo the dam. That could be satisfy, you know, they could figure out that discrepancy by doing this core testing.
So it's turned out to be a lot more than just putting a pipe inside the pipe.
Yes, that we're talking about as well as a temporary repair as well. But they're also asking for borrow material on site, and that has to be appropriate material. So they're requesting that as part of the test as well. Is there appropriate borrow material, and will it meet the criteria? If not, then that's going to lead down the way to them having to bring in material. And so that's what I mean. There's going to be another. This is the testing, but it's going to kind of lead the way, I think, for the actual reconstruction.
Let's hope we can get it fixed before it fails. That's what I'm worried about.
Well, and that's something that we did add into the MRA right off the bat was you know, those concerns. And, you know, if there is something that we need to do right away, maybe we need to address that. So, yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Once again, thanks for coming.
Thank you very much.
Anything else I can answer?
I think you answered a lot of questions, gave us more clarity in terms of what the process is about.
Hopefully when we get this storybook, they call it, once that comes out, I think it's going to be chock full of information. So, and then you can just ask for clarification. Okay, I think this is what this saying, is that correct or not?
Good idea. So, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. So, Rob, I'm going to be giving the commission a very brief update on the collaborative meeting.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got time to listen, you might have something to add to that.
Okay.
As a district ranger.
A little bit later or right now?
Well, I don't. We're going into that.
We're
going
to go into old business shortly. We've got one other item, but we can move straight into that if you want.
If it would fit, Rob.
Yeah, we'll go ahead and accommodate.
Yeah, I got time.
So
thank you, guys.
Okay. Thanks, Cindy.
Well, with that idea.
Yeah.
It's nice to see you, Cindy. Been a while.
Yeah, I know.
You shouldn't be such a stranger.
I know. Sorry. He's keeping you.
Is this your pen, Cindy? So we are going to move into old business, and with respect for Rob's time, we'll have Joel get his report first, if you will, Commissioner.
Okay, and I only have two things to report on. The other one was the DEQ meeting, and I'll let Doug report on that. Him and I were both there, so he can cover that one. The Forest Collaborative met again on last Friday, based on a request from me to, through the fuels group, to make recommendations to the collaborative about the kind of project and where, size, scope of a project that would fit the use of good neighbor authority or a stewardship contract for the county to be more involved, more than likely working with state forestry, which is the direction we're headed. State forestry has now hired a good neighbor authority specialist. She is a forester, and she has the skill set to help write an agreement, whether it's a stewardship agreement or a good neighbor agreement, which is an agreement between the Forest Service, state forestry, and the county, or whoever's putting it together to make something happen on the ground. So that was one significant thing that we achieved. We did have several hours of discussion, and after getting feedback from the forester and the fuels position forest person from the Jackson office, Rob had a lot of input, and we came up with potentially, as I remember, three possible projects that we might be looking at that are fairly small in scope. We kind of set some others aside that were a lot more involved, that involved homeowner associations and private landowners, that it became obvious, not that they weren't good projects, but we were not going to be able to achieve them in a timely manner. I guess that's my way of putting it. So what I have on my notes is Union Pass potentially, timber project, Moose Jip timber sale possibly, and then a fields project on Big Sandy, up towards the Big Sandy openings. That seems to be, I think, was a combined recommendation from you guys, was that fields project and the Big Sandy openings, you could use a CE to, to get there. I had that written down. So the my understanding, the way we left it, is the Forest Service is going to get with the fields people, and they're going to try and simmer this down to a recommendation. Is that your understanding, Rob?
Yeah, so the meeting that was held that Joel requested with the fields group was very beneficial for us, because we have been asked to do something that's a little bit different than we've done in the previous years. We've had a five-year action plan for timber sales, and we have that on the books, but we've also been asked now to provide a five-year plan for fuels management, which is, you know, just a different ball of wax. And we are meeting next week to discuss our five-year plan for fuels management, and we do have a couple of projects that are in the queue that we're, you know, we've put in our priority. But meeting with the fuels group and the collaborative was beneficial, because it gave us kind of a solidarity, if you will, of where we felt there was needs to go and do additional fuels work. And one additional was on the Big Piney District was the deadline area that got brought up. Yeah, so we had four areas that were highlighted at the fuels collaborative group, and so we are going to take that information and try our best to insert that into our five-year plan. And so based on our priorities and our needs for the various targets, we're going to use the information we got, put it in our five-year plan, knowing that, you know, not all of this stuff is easily gotten to. We're restricted by our capacity and our budgets and everything else. So if we go at this together, you know, the collaborative has the ability to garner some funding, garner some additional, you know, if we go through a good neighbor authority, maybe there's some assistance that we can realize on the forest from various entities. And then we'll start working through those projects to bring them to fruition. One of the big things that the forest has kind of made me aware of, and that wanted all the rangers and everything to be fully aware of, is we don't want to go big ticket right away. Joel mentioned the East Rim project, which is Packer Minor all the way up to the Kendall area. There's a lot of interspersed lands in that wildland urban interface, from private to state to BLM to us. And that's a project that's a little bit more complicated, like Joel said. But down at Big Sandy, we have pretty much Forest Service up around those openings. We have infrastructure. We have the trailhead. That might be a little easier take early on, and we'll take that into consideration as we're throwing that onto our plan. So hopefully we can move forward and get some of these projects done using the collaborative group. And it sounds like Sublette County, well, you're Sublette County, but Lincoln County is also interested in doing this. And I know the Lincoln County Collaborative is working through the district rangers over there to get the same type of process going over there. And ultimately, I guess, we would like to see that those needs kind of highlighted spatially, quantify some acreages and that sort of thing, so that we can show, or the counties can show the state, that we have a lot of needs over here to get caught up. So yeah.
I think that pretty well covers it, Mr. Chairman. The one other thing, and I think as you mentioned it, Rob, but I think there is opportunity for our GIS mm-hmm. person to sit down with your GIS yep. people, and I think we have the ability maybe to help provide some overlays and stuff that would be mutually beneficial.
You know, I think, and I, like I said at the collaborative, I think with everything that we're doing at the collaborative and all the issues that we've got going on our shared lands, you know, from roads to timber to fuels reduction to, you know, wild and scenic river. I mean, there's just a lot that it would be great, I think, for the county to be able to display that, so that when we're going for, you know, for funding and that sort of thing, that we have these priorities set and these plans developed that are consistent between the forest and the county, that it would just help us down the road. And, you know, we talked a little bit about Lincoln getting on board with that as everything goes. So hopefully we can get something pulled together. We'll be pulling together a spatial database of all the fuels treatment and timber treatment. Timber we already have. Fuels, we're adding that right now. So we'll be able to provide a lot of that data in layers. So.
Okay. So that's my report.
Doug, would you like to go?
I can. I guess I have two things. Rob invited me in along with Farm. I'll just kind of touch base a little bit on what he brought us up to speed with, basically what they talked about here today, to give us kind of a before the action assessment of what was going to occur, what could occur, and so it was a precursor of the meeting today, as far as I was concerned. At least I sat here knowing kind of what was coming, and I was glad to hear that it didn't, the Forest Service primacy didn't come on down.
Mm-hmm.
That was important. And secondly, as Joel alluded, I attended the ozone meeting down at Boulder. It was attended by, I don't know what the number, but there was a substantial number of folks there. Some with questions, some who asked questions probably didn't get the answers that they wanted. All in all, I thought it was handled very well by the oil and gas operators. They did a pretty darn good job of answering questions that, you know, in my mind were trying to put them into a corner a little bit. I don't know how Joel perceived that, but that was the perception I got, and I think they handled it well. You know, my take on it was, I think the industry is doing a magnificent job of keeping the emissions under control best that technology will allow today. That's sort of my take on that. And if Joel got something to add to it, do so.
I think that covers it.
Thanks, Mr. Beckery. Mr. Noble.
No, I met with Rob. Went to the groundbreaking ceremony for broadband, and I'm in contact with the union on the green side still. They just gave us permission to tie into their line, which is a significant improvement of boring next to it or plowing next to it because of easements on the BLM. So that was a big hurdle. They're getting their materials list together for us, so we'll know what that'll encompass. So the green site's going well. I have another meeting on that at 4:00 today. I think that's it, sir.
Rob, if you got things to do, appreciate you coming.
Can I talk about an old business thing?
Oh, absolutely.
I just want to let you guys know that we had an individual come in, request some personal use rocks. Talked to Rio Verde about going up to get some rocks. They kind of passed them back off to us because it was a personal use thing. I called Mike Jackson up just to clarify a couple of issues there. Nothing bad about that interaction whatsoever, but it forced us to clarify some of the nuances of that whole thing, and we're all on the same page with the permits that we might provide for personal use versus what the county is doing up there with the Ricard rocks. So I just want to let you know that that's working well, and we're continuing to communicate. So
that's good to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know Mike Jackson did a great job.
I thought you were going to say they had a shootout at the old.
No. No, everything's good, sir. So
all good.
And I'll take off. My briefcase got stuck in the wheels of the chair.
Oh, my pen got lost under there too.
Rob, I appreciate it.
You know me. Yes. I'm available all the time. Stop by or call me. So.
Good. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rob.
Commissioner Rawhauser.
Huh?
Your report.
Huh? I was fishing.
Went to the Migration Corridor meeting in Rock Springs. And on the panel were landowners, people from mining, oil and gas, Muley Fanatics, Recreation, Environmental Group, Wyoming Game and Fish, the BLM, the Governor's Office, and the Wyoming County Commissioner's Office. So there was a pretty diverse group. Had a lot of good questions and a lot of good discussion. Presentations, the very first presentations were made, of course, by the Game and Fish. Then Oil and Gas made a presentation, the Mining made a presentation, and then the BLM made a presentation on what their thoughts were about these migration corridors. And we've been asked to come and give our opinions as county commissioners in Lander about the migration corridors here. And we're going to put something together because there's not many things that the county commissioners have done in terms of the migration corridors. You know, their planning and zoning was mentioned, you know. You know, things got to go through the planning and zoning, but at no time since I've been a commissioner has the word migration corridor come up with a planning and zoning, whether we're adding, dividing a 10-acre plot or adding a whole new subdivision or whatever. So we'll put that program together and present that with what we think. Two things. One, I had a request from Jay at the fairgrounds to talk to you about bleachers. He's had another request to rent a set of bleachers after the fair to the tune of $3,500. And he would do an MOU just the same as he's done with everybody else. This is a different group. He would take this group of bleachers at the same time he takes the other bleachers to these people. I think they're in Idaho. So I told him I would run it by you guys to see if you had any problems with us continuing or expanding what we're doing now at the fairgrounds and renting these bleachers.
You're waiting for a comment?
Yeah, yeah. I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think the ones we did before was Blackfoot, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I'm not sure of the towns. I don't know where this is
Jay's
at.
Jay's satisfied with it, and it's going to be done in conjunction at the same time, as long as we got our standard MOU in terms of their responsibilities for the bleachers. I don't see it as anything but positive, and it adds some money to the coffers.
Yeah, I don't have any problem. And Jay will be careful to make sure it doesn't conflict with when we need them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So
that's the main issue. Mm-hmm. And it does give us some revenue.
I think the last time we had the discussion, seemed to me like everything that cost him was reimbursed from.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I've no issue with it.
Okay, my next thing is you guys own some baseball fields down there. And there's a.
Mr. Rawhauser.
Yeah.
You said you guys.
You commissioners.
Us guys.
Well, anyway, there's a group down there that has been working very hard to get these ball fields up to snuff so the kids can play on them. And they're getting really close. I've talked to our attorney about the methods of getting rid of some of the varmints. And the weed and pest is helping. So that's the avenue that we have taken in that respect. So that's where we are there. But they're looking very nice, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised at some point in time, after these all get put into play, they'll come to us for some funding because they belong to us. And I don't know whether we go through the rec board, how we do this. It'll be a discussion at a later time because they're not asking for anything right now. So they've got donations. They've got everything.
In past conversations, I think, Mac, you mentioned that there was some waivers involved.
Oh, they've already signed all those.
So I was curious. Has that been working out?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. They've got a packet full of them. I know that. Yeah.
There you go.
Everybody has to sign the waiver.
No lawsuits.
So we're off to Lander next week to go back to this meeting, and I'm looking forward to it because it is Sublette County. They talk a little bit about Carbon County and the Bags Mule Deer Migration Herd, which doesn't hold a candle to the migrations of the antelope, elk, and the deer here in Sublette County. So, very interesting.
Have you got, along those lines, if you've got information you can give them on the number of miles of fence that's been converted in Sublette County to wildlife-friendly? Game and Fish should have a summary of that available.
Well, if the Game and Fish has it, then they've handed that out to all of the, because they had all kinds of packets that we were not, okay. We didn't get.
Well, maybe they have it out there, but
yeah.
But the mitigation fund is paid for a lot. But Game and Fish has been involved in all of it,
sure.
Because they determine where it needs
where
to be.
Where they want to put the fences.
So that's why I'm thinking they would have those numbers.
Okay.
Well, I wonder if NRCS wouldn't, because they were involved in a lot of that money payments.
They were involved in part of it, but not all of it.
No, I understand that, but they might be a good source of...
And our discussion about an in-kind contribution to this project between Big Piney and LaBarge has really, we got quite a few kudos for the county stepping up and being a partner, because evidently in a lot of other places, the county's hands off. They were looking for someone else to do it. So
do we need to formalize that?
No, not at this time. I think we're going to need to wait and see what happens. But just like the letter that we got, or the thing we got this morning that Doc's going to sign, if we can get a Crayola, we'll get that signed and sent, because that build grant is being, they're moving forward with that.
Yeah, it is.
I have a Crayola. I have a pen.
Well, yeah. Whoever makes a statement that says finally and then follows it with a statement that says also, it needs a little editing.
But who did that? It wasn't me. I just misspelled the word.
All the words were spelled right.
I understand.
You also need to get his own Sublette County letter.
Yeah, we will.
So, Mac, I have a question, and I don't know whether you brought it up or not. Somebody did, about a wind farm section down there.
Yes.
Is that in the corridor, and if so, how's that being addressed?
Well, I haven't had a chance to bring that up yet, because when the Trona people or the mining man, Mr. Detai, spoke, they were talking about, of course, all the Trona is underground.
Yeah.
But they've got issues above ground where they do all their processing and a railroad and all this kind of stuff. Well, it's on the very, very end of the migration corridor. And it's on the very, very end of the wintering range. But right across the road from that mine is that solar panel thing that was put together. But it was never brought up. So... I have to find the right time to bring that up, to say, you know, how does that work, and, you know, to fence off everything.
Well, a section of ground is a significant
portion. Oh, yes, it is. You know. Yeah, it's huge. It's bigger than, I believe, the Trona mine.
I would give them my report, sir.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
For sure.
Did you have a scholarship thing?
We took care of that.
Oh, okay.
We did. Yeah, we're good. Yeah, we're good. I'll explain it to you.
Okay.
Okay, the only thing I have to add is both of them have been partially covered. One was with respect to the migration corridors. The panel, as Mac mentioned, that the governor appointed seems to be well-rounded, but more importantly, I think, is, and I don't remember the gentleman's name, that he chose to be the moderator for that panel, is going to keep them not only on track, but has been very clear that he expects them to make some hardcore decisions and recommendations to the governor, knowing full well that they're not going to be unanimous, but they're going to be anticipated. And this particular group, sorry for them, has 48 hours worth of meetings, 16 hours in Rock Springs, 16 hours in Lander, and another 16 hours is going to finalize in Pinedale on August 12th and 13th. So I think he's going to keep them on task. The original couple of days was spent with the people from the various stakeholders and concerns. I think Jill Randall was there from the Game and Fish and did a very excellent presentation from the Game and Fish standpoint, particularly on habitat and so on. So that part went particularly well. We were the only county commissioners there. There was nobody from Lincoln and Sweetwater. There was, Doc Randall did come for part of the meeting on Monday, which I thought was surprising. But we are clearly going to be given the opportunity to address the panel with some concerns and comments at the upcoming meeting on Monday. So if you got anything that you would like us to consider, hone in, Joel's question about the amount amount of wildlife fence that we've already done is an excellent idea because they need to know what we've done so far. What they're asking, surprisingly, we have very little say-so or control in. We don't have any policy towards migration corridors. And what the one of points that I got that they're going to, one of their major concerns is going to be these bottleneck areas. And I don't know that Sublette County has another bottleneck area other than Fremont Dam coming into town. I don't know if there's a another one south in Boulder or not. I was talking to Joel about that, but I think they're probably going to be looking at that.
I don't know a lot about it, but I thought they considered this one out here by the elementary school for the pronghorn bottleneck.
I don't know.
And they did showcase the wildlife crossing there at Trapper's Point. So that being said, Tom and I also attended that, not the open house, which I didn't go to, but attended that meeting with the consortium at the public meeting prior to that and had that discussion with the folks from Union. And I think, that went well, and wished them well in terms of their progress moving forward, which we'll just have to keep an eye on. And other than that, I don't think I have anything else. Now, moving along with the agenda item before I get to the final one, I know Andre's here for a reason, and we got a report from Carrie as well. So call it, Andre. Heads or tails?
Heads.
Okay.
I need 2 minutes.
Okay.
So I've been trying to get the golf board to come in here and ask you guys about this cooler that they want to put in. That's extra cooler space. And two meetings now, they haven't tried to get on the agenda, and I think I'm told it's because they all work and they just none of them have time to get over here. So I ran over here and decided I'm just going to ask for them. So there's the room where they keep the liquor, like just the extra bottles and stuff. That originally was supposed to be a beer cooler, and somewhere down the line it got nixed. But Jed's over there trying to run that kitchen, and he, on the weekends and stuff, he runs out of beer regularly. And they're taking care of everything. They're acquiring all the costs and the labor to get down that hallway to exit by the handicap parking spaces. That's where that little liquor room is. They want to cut a hole in the wall, and they're going to put in a cooler. It's sliding doors. It won't obstruct the path. I've had Todd look at it. He's good with it as long as it's the sliding door style. We don't have any issues with it as far as maintenance goes. that was supposed to be a cooler in the first place, but I told them they needed to get permission from you guys to, you know, cut a hole in a wall and put it in. I wasn't going to make that call. We don't really have to do anything. They're purchasing the cooler. Jed's purchasing the cooler, I believe, and either Bruce or Charlie is doing the labor.
And they're the ones that built the building.
Yeah, they built the building.
I don't see a problem with that. Any of you guys?
Sounds good to me, especially if Audrey's good with it.
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
So, since you're here, Andre, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
May I ask you a question? I just ask you a question. Can I ask you another question?
You can ask
me. Did you ever have that conversation with Joan Mitchell at the seniors in Marbleton with regards to their concerns or problems with the sound system and what it would take? It's maintenance, not computer, any projected cost, and how we could approach that.
I mean, what we did talk about is we got a better estimate, which wasn't better by any means. I mean, it's over $70,000 to redo the sound system. But my concern was that we had that senior center line item, and we took the money out of it, and now we need it. If we're going to end up doing the sound system, we're going to need that money, because
so that's something we need to consider moving forward with the budget. So what you're saying is if that money were in the line item, then you could move forward with that request.
No, that's not what I'm wanting. What I'm wanting is you guys to consider maybe leaving that money there while we try and haggle with these guys and get them to do it cheaper.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to... I know that's going to take time, and you guys are going to get ready to finalize everything.
Right.
So I just wanted to let you know it's going to be at least 70-something thousand. These are the same guys that do all the sound system stuff for the courtrooms for the entire state. So, and it's who we regularly use. They do the maintenance on this stuff. The problem is that system's analog. All the hookups are outdated. People are coming in to hook up. The computers are new. They don't have any of the hookups to do the sound. Everything's outdated. So they're going to redo it all digital, and new projector, all that stuff. So it's expensive stuff.
So Mr. Chairman, are you sure everything is sound system related and something not to do? Because I think that building acoustics in there is terrible.
No. We're not even redoing the speed. The speakers are going to stay the same. They're redoing.
It's just going from analog to digital, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, they got to do the whole decks, the amplifiers, the projector, the pads on the walls where people control it from, what you plug into, all of that. So that means all those cables and everything have to be replaced for digital. And it's the way of the world as far as technology goes, because they do so many events over there. And these people bring in the stuff for their music or the audio, the visual stuff, and they can't even hardly use it.
So, Mr. Chairman, rather than deal with one company, is there a way to make them compete for this, like a bid or a proposal?
I mean, we can try. We hardly use anybody else because these are the guys that do the courtrooms in there. So,
you would like to think there's someone out there that's their competitor, though.
Yeah, well, we can check and we can try, but my thing is we know for a fact these guys are good. They're really good at what they do. And when we have an issue, we call them, and a lot of the time they log in right over the computer and fix our issues for us. I mean, the service is great with these guys. So we have a really good relationship with them. We don't use them that often because we don't have that many issues. But I'll check and I'll see.
It was just a thought.
But even if someone was slightly cheaper, I still would probably go with these guys because we're familiar. So.
Well, Carrie, if that's something we were going to consider, is now the time to do it because you got to publish the budget?
So we moved it from the general to your fund and left 50 in it.
Say that again.
We moved it from the general fund
yeah.
to maintenance
yeah.
and left 50 in it.
Yeah.
So.
But that wouldn't even cover the cost of the sound system. That just covers maintenance. And we're already spending over $8,000 of that right off the get-go, just redoing the floors at Rendezvous Point.
Well, we're running out of time to do it. It does sound like they need to get together and come up with pay
number.
We
can always fund it later when we know what it is.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm fine with it. It doesn't matter to me. I was just throwing it out there. Because you know Joan's going to want it done.
Well, but also know that if it doesn't get done, you're going to hold on to the money and not spend it.
Oh, well, no. I mean, it's
going to get. He could have
spent
it. Oh,
the money's there. It's
getting
done.
You're supposed to say, yeah, boss, that's right.
It's going to get done. That's all I. Joan's not going to let it go.
You get Joan one of that megaphone thing so that she can talk through about all that other stuff. Yeah, that works. Tell her we just upgraded her.
Yeah, just
to you do that. You
yeah.
make it to her.
I'll have her call you. But anyway.
So that's something we just leave the way it is for now?
That's fine. I can just get us, I mean, once we figure out what the actual cost is going to be, if we, you know, she's been talking to them, and she's going to see what she can do cheaper to get it down. Once we get the dollar amount, I'll let you guys know. Too.
You are?
Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter to me as long as it's up to you guys.
Well, as long as you're not going to spend it, I guess it's okay. Okay. Well, I guess we'll just leave it at that then.
Okay. I'm going to go to the golf course.
Okay. Thanks, Andre. Carrie, do you have something you want to report, old business, whatever? Talk.
Yes. When we were talking about a human resources person, I had initially considered one of the girls in my office that had been there a long time, but she didn't have payroll experience. I thought that the position didn't really need the payroll experience, but as we got into things, people leaving, retiring, benefits, I realized that really needs to have extensive payroll experience. And I don't have the time to teach her payroll from the ground up to go with human resources. So we have started the process of her getting certified, and she's still going to do that. But there is another girl in my office that has extensive payroll experience, and I'm going to go ahead and get her, we're getting her certified, and she will try to look at that role of human resources person. My goal is to separate payroll and human resources. That's why I didn't offer her up right away, because I wanted her doing payroll, but there's another person that can do payroll that I can help with. Well, payroll will be separate from human resources, and at some point, once we get her, as she goes through her training more, and we define the role of human resources, we'll come to the board to see about either separating it out of my office or what to do with it. But I want to have a better understanding of what the position is and what's involved before, and Caleb as well, before we make any recommendation to the board about what to do with this position.
How long does the certification process take?
There's testing in December that's in Utah, and she feels pretty certain she can be ready for that by then. She has a bachelor's degree in business management and has spent a lot of time doing payroll. And she understands the concept of the benefits and how all that flows.
Do you see a potential problem down the road if this individual goes forward with that, and then you have to balance out their expertise in payroll and HR? Are you going to be able to utilize them in both capacities?
No.
So you're going to lose one way or another?
Right. that's why I thought the first idea was best.
Yeah.
But I can help. We need two people to be able to do each position. You can't just have one person, or else if they're gone, then you're stuck without human resources or stuck without payroll.
So the initial person you were considering, that you're not going to consider because not having payroll experience.
She's going to assist.
Okay.
She's going to go ahead and go through the training and be involved, but she's not going to be the lead person or head it up.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to get to is, with the way you're presenting this, does that mean that eventually you're going to have to hire another position? If you've got one person that's experienced in payroll that you want to be involved and get certified in HR, and then once that happens, you want to separate payroll from HR, you're splitting apart a position or adding one.
No. I am splitting the position into two people that are already there. Andrea's going to be doing payroll, mm-hmm. and I will be helping her. And Kayla will be doing human resources, and Corey will be helping her.
Okay.
If the human resources position leaves my office, then I'm not sure what kind of hole that's going to put as far as my people and my workflow, because she does a lot of other things too. So that's why we want to be very careful about how we say what happens with this human resources person, trying to avoid adding another staff.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in this whole discussion about human resources, and I never really thought about it much till the day, but as he's coming back in my mind, that we need a pretty close tie-in between this position and the county attorney's office. And I'm wondering what, Matt, you've heard all this discussion. What does that seem like? All these touchy times we talk about human resources, we're also talking to the county attorney's office. And it just seems like we need a pretty close tie-in there.
Yeah, I would still be fully collaborating with the HR position. I mean, the concern from our office is that an employee comes in and makes a complaint, and we don't represent that employee, right? We represent the county, so that employee might disclose confidential or privileged information, and it puts our office in a tough spot. So that's the thinking with this HR position is, that's the repository for where all these complaints go, and then that HR person will come to our office and say, okay, here are the facts, tell me the law, give me a recommendation on how to move forward. So we'll still be heavily involved in the HR field, but we will be removed from being that initial point person where the complaint is delivered to, so to speak. But yeah, I fully expect to be involved, even if this position does come to fruition.
Okay, that answers the question.
So to follow up, you guys discussed this a little on the HR thing. Will that person have the ability to look at a complaint and say, that's frivolous, I'm not even going to, or everything that comes to the HR would go to you, regardless if it's in that person's mind, frivolous or not?
Yeah, I'd be happy to look at anything, to be a second set of eyes on any issue. So, I mean, I'd make it very clear to whoever that person is, please, my door's always open. Come talk to me, even if you think there isn't an issue, let's discuss it. So I certainly, I expect to be heavily involved in the process.
Any other questions or comments from Karen? I think thanks for the update.
I think so.
Yeah. Now, we do have one more final item on the agenda. We have a contract with the Department of Health in Sublette County that pertains to the county health officer. So I need a motion to approve the contract between the Department of Health, Public Health Division, and Sublette County for the duties of a county health officer.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
Any discussion? This is something we talked about previously with the Department of Health, but not this portion of it. It has to do with a county health officer. So if there's not any other comments or questions, I'll call the vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I did say aye.
Motion carries.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, that reminds me, we still have that contract with the university with extension that we forgot to do anything with.
Yeah, you're right.
And we've seen the contract. In fact, we had the motion on the floor and I withdrew it. But
exactly.
I think based after our discussion, we will have more discussion after the fair, but I, as far as 4-H and all that stuff, but I do think we need to go ahead and approve that contract. So that said, I move we approve that contract with UW Extension.
Second.
Any questions or comments on that?
No discussion. Well, I remember sitting through that discussion, and it was fairly poorly done, in my opinion. So, what does this, by approving this, Joel, explain to me what this in fact will do?
What this in fact does is we provide the building, which we're providing now.
Right.
We pay for the secretary's position, and we pay for half of the 4-H position, and that's what this contract does.
So have you had an opportunity to visit?
I've not visited yet with Kelly Crane, but I intend to visit not only with him, but with the new, and I can't remember her name, the new dean of the Ag College. They just got her hired. And I can't even remember her name, but those are, having that discussion does not preclude the need to move forward with
our contract with the
traditional contract with the university on providing the office space and all that stuff. They're kind of two separate issues. My idea was we hold off on that to get them to the table and make sure they come to the meeting, which they did. And my feedback is very similar to yours. I've still got some concerns, but it's going to be after the fair before we really have a chance to sit down and talk about it. Well, and I don't want to put this
on. No, I'm not. You know, we need to have this discussion about 4-H educator because it's not good. And the university needs to be aware. And perhaps by holding up this contract payment will get their attention a little bit. I don't know.
I think we can get it without it.
I think we need to get it. I don't think that's the way about going about getting it.
Yeah.
I think that they got to have contract with well into the next year, and they need their the space and the provisions.
But once that expires, we're probably in a bind to avoid closing that office down there with no agreement.
So if there's not any other discussion, I'll call for the vote on that one as well. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion carries unanimously. And I think
Mr. Chairman, just one other thing I meant to mention, and everybody here knows Jill Randall.
Yes.
And I don't know if everybody's aware that she got appointed to the new job statewide of Wildlife Migration Coordinator. That's why she's at these meetings.
Yes, yes. Good point. I'm glad you brought that out.
I just wanted to clarify that. And then in regard to our Force Collaborative, the nearest number I can come up with right now, and I sat down with Mike Hinn a little bit after that last collaborative meeting, I think we're going to be looking at a ballpark $50,000 for the budget for a project.
Is that just for us?
Yeah, that'd be for the county's participation in a Good Neighbor Authority project.
So that's less than you originally thought.
Well, and it was always a guess, and it kind of still is. Yeah. But and I'm still okay with waiting until we know, and then as long as everybody knows, we're probably going to need some money at some point to do something.
So with the collaborative, does that mean they all put that in, or we? How's that?
Well, it's a county collaborative.
I understand that.
And that $50,000 would be from our budget to help fund probably a position with state forestry or a contract with somebody to get the work done for a project.
No, I understand that part of it, but the collaborative is comprised of more than us.
Right.
My question is, are the other folks that are participants in the collaborative, is that what they're ponying up also? Or are we more so than them? I'm just curious how that's being.
Generally speaking, like the people who represent Mule Deer, for example, on the collaborative, they don't write a check themselves, but they go to the Mule Deer Foundation and they pony up money for projects. The trails project that the collaborative supported up on Burnt Lake, for example, the Rock Springs ATV Club hauled up a skid steer and they did a bunch of trail work, donated time and effort. That's pretty much how that's been working. Of course, the real money to the collaborative has been coming for the Forest Service in terms of the Joint Chiefs funding. And we do have opportunity between the two counties, and Rich Stem has been talking to me about this several times now, and I've already forgot the acronym, but I did finally figure out what it meant. But if we apply for it's a pretty in-depth forest management project on the BT, and if we should get accepted for that, it's $1 million a year for 10 years that we could bring into the BT for forest management. Hmm. It's significant.
But would we have to match part of that?
I don't think on that one. I don't believe so. Some of these other grants do take a match.
Right.
Quite a few of them do. Anyway, that's down the road. That's not going to happen in the near term. We got to get our feet on the ground and do something small and kind
get
of
that
some success.
Yeah.
And then build the momentum for something bigger. Sorry to sidetrack you.
Well, nobody has anything else, I think we're done. We'll call for a motion to adjourn.
So move.